I hope everybody has been enjoying their holiday week this week, hopefully had a safe and socially distanced Thanksgiving. So we're going to take on, and along with your heavy meal, a heavy topic, the future of San Francisco in tech. But it's going to be an interesting one because I'm joined here today on this episode of the Information's 411 by Corey Weinberg, a frequent host of the show. Today we are serving as co-hosts. Hey, Corey.
Thanks for having me.
So you had a great conversation with State Senator Scott Wiener about San Francisco and whether or not there is, in fact, a Texodus happening here with many high-level people leaving the city and or bringing their companies with them. But before we get into that, I wanted to maybe, you know, we should share some personal anecdotes on how San Francisco affected us individually as people who, you know, make our livelihood in tech. So I grew up in the Bay Area and have seen, to a small degree, booms and busts come when it comes to tech influx. You know, there was obviously the dot-com boom and then whatever you want to call this current era. And it's not surprising to see people kind of flood into the city, get excited about, you know, the prospect of striking it rich in tech, and then either it didn't work out or they decide that California is too crazy of a place to live for whatever reason and they get out. I'm curious, you know, as a more recent entrant to San Francisco into the Bay Area, I don't know, what do you think about it all?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually one of the few topics where I actually feel like I'm more optimistic than most people about. There are like two sides to it. Like there's a certain set of people who are watching successful, wealthy tech people and tech companies say, we're going to be less reliant on San Francisco for our workforce, or we're going to leave San Francisco entirely. And then that says to some of the chattering class that San Francisco's done, that it's there's going to be a free fall and tax revenue and stuff like that. I don't know. I kind of think this is kind of a rebalancing that has been a long time coming. No one has really been that happy with the way things have been the last few years, where you just have seen a surge in tech jobs, but also a surge in rents and traffic congestion. So I don't know. To me, this seems like a little bit of a leveling, a little bit of a redistribution of jobs. I don't think it's the end of tech in San Francisco, but, you know, maybe it's just going to spread out a little bit, and that's probably good for the country and good for the region.
Right, or at the very least, good for the city. You know, it's funny that everyone in recent years associates San Francisco with being the tech place, when in fact, it's, you know, a several hundred-year-old city that's had many industries come and go over the years, and I don't know, it's kind of more interesting than just one industry that's here. That said, you know, there are huge implications, obviously, when you have companies and wealthy individuals deciding to move out. And so I imagine your conversation with Scott kind of touched on whether or not there is a bigger issue at play here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the tech industry, obviously, it's a sector, it's business. It leans less to the left. It leans to the center, to the right, much more than the city of San Francisco does, right? So there has always been this tension between how does the city function and who does it serve versus who does the tech industry want it to serve. And the pandemic has sort of given those people who want leverage over the city of San Francisco in sort of sorts to get its act together to say, like, we don't need San Francisco anymore. And, you know, my conversation with Senator Wiener, he has been one of the kind of leading voices on California's policy challenges, particularly as it relates to housing and transportation. And he, you know, recognizes those challenges, but kind of doesn't see this moment actually as this huge turning point. He kind of thinks it's going to get somewhat back to normal. Once there's a vaccine, people will return to offices and whatnot. But we kind of take the conversation beyond that, obviously, and talk a little bit more about solutions.
All right, I'm excited to hear it. Let's play the tape.
Scott Wiener has had a busy year. He has been San Francisco's state senator in the California legislature since 2016. This month, he won re-election handily. He has tried, as he often does, to find ways to get denser housing built in California. He wrote a bill to legalize psychedelic drugs. He was the subject of attacks by the online conspiracy group QAnon. Senator Wiener, thanks for coming on the Information's 411.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to have a conversation with you, particularly framed around what I'm hearing a lot about in this current moment, which is a lot of reflection on where should tech workers, tech executives, tech investors, where should they be living, working, doing business? There seems to be a lot of fervor around the idea that momentum around remote work has decoupled the Bay Area and California from the tech industry, at least from maybe having as tight of a grip as it once did. What are you hearing on the ground from folks in tech? What do you make of this whole conversation right now, broadly?
Honestly, I don't buy that. And someone should write a book listing all of the hot takes that people have had this year about and all the millions of ways that the coronavirus pandemic is going to permanently change all aspects of human existence. And I'd like to remind people that about 100 years ago, in 1918 to 1920, we had a pandemic that killed far more than 50 million people worldwide. Many, many more people died of the Spanish flu than have died or will die from the coronavirus. And that pandemic ran its course, and then it was over. And then we returned back to normal human existence. And so I know that in the middle of a pandemic, when things are extremely different now than they normally would be, it's very tempting to say, everyone's going to permanently work from home. Everyone's going to be able to live on the top of a mountaintop because they don't need to live near where they work anymore. No one's ever going to want to live in a city again. No one's ever going to want to go to a concert or a sporting event again. I've heard that before. And I don't think that we can say that about any of these things. I believe that when this is over, will there be more remote working than before? Yes. I think that we have learned a lot and there's going to be some more flexibility. Is that going to be the norm? I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I do believe that offices have a role to play and physical proximity to work has a role to play. And so I think there have been a lot of speculative predictions that I don't know will actually play out.
What's informing that viewpoint? Are you, is it just sort of your study of human nature, or are you hearing from large employers, essentially, hey, we're not, it's pretty much status quo, after a vaccine?
Well, first of all, I'm not suggesting that it's going to be status quo. There will be differences, and we have learned some things, and you can always make improvements. And sometimes an emergency, as terrible as it can be, causes you to experiment with some new ways of doing things. But I will say that people in tech have expressed to me one-on-one that they're not so confident that broad-based permanent work from home for everyone is going to be a successful model. And there are some real challenges and that some of the statements that are being made, they believe, are extreme. So again, I'm not sitting here pretending like I know exactly what the world is going to look like in a year or 2 years or 3 years. What I am saying is that that it is, I think, very speculative for people to just start asserting that we're going to have this broad-based permanent work from home.
The worst, sort of PR would be saying like, we're moving everybody back into the office right now or what have you. So I think folks that have that tendency maybe just aren't speaking out.
I also, I have heard from people in different companies and some different industries, office-based industries, that they are planning the reactivation of offices and, whether it's next June 1st or July 1st of next year or whatever dates they're projecting, they are making projections of when they're going to return to office work and what that transition is going to look like.
I think also this is, people are writing about it, people are talking about it, people are tweeting about it, in part because we have sort of reached this, this decade of sort of fairly rapid tech industry job growth, tax-based growth in San Francisco proper. And you were previously a supervisor within the city of San Francisco. You're now in the state Senate. How has the city, how has the state handled this boom?
Well, let's be clear. The problems that the tech boom have supposedly caused were not caused by the tech boom. It was caused by our failure for 50 years to build enough housing, to invest sufficiently in robust public transportation infrastructure. And so then when you have an actual period of strong economic and job growth, which is what we've had over the last 10 years in San Francisco, and you haven't prepared with housing and public transit, yes, you're going to have problems. You're going to have a very stressed housing market and a run-up in housing costs, and you're going to have a lot of congestion. I moved to San Francisco in 1997, and I remember when I moved here, right before I moved here, I spoke to someone who had lived in San Francisco for a long time and no longer did. And he said to me, wow, you're going to have a great time in San Francisco. It's a fun city. But just remember, San Francisco has no economy other than tourism. And so you're moving to a hollowed out economy where it's a lot of fun and it's beautiful, but don't expect any kind of real economic activity there. Well, that's not a good thing. And now we are a place where we have headquartered companies and companies that start and grow here, or companies that come here and jobs created here. And so that is a good thing. And you know, before COVID-19, we had all these, there were some people who were starting to say, well, no, we don't need more housing. We just need fewer jobs. Well, then when you have fewer jobs, you see what the downsides are in terms of your budget, in terms of economic activity. And so I really think we need to look in the mirror and look at what the actual reasons for the problems we have are. And it's not the growth in tech. It's because we made very poor decisions around housing and transportation.
What seems to be clear is California is heading towards a pretty substantial budget deficit within the next 3 years. It, from what I've read, you know, tax collection has actually been up or sort of surpassed expectations this year, in part because folks who have high incomes aren't the ones who are being laid off right now. But there is a lot of concern about sort of what happens to that sort of state budget down the road and how can it continue to fill the kind of service need. How do you see the state sort of solving that riddle of how to close that budget deficit in the coming years?
Well, it's really important that we recover economically as quickly as possible. That's the most important thing that we can be doing. And one of the benefits of getting rid of Donald Trump is, and hopefully, you know, I hope winning these races in Georgia, is having a rational stimulus policy. We saw what happened when we did several big stimuluses coming out of Congress in the spring, and how that really buttressed the economy. Our unemployment, as bad as it is, did not get as bad as people thought it was going to get. We've added back many jobs. And one of the reasons that has happened is because Congress and the president were able to work together on two very robust stimulus packages. That has fizzled out in terms of that the ability to deliver. And we need another big one. And so we need the federal government to step in to help support the economy so that we can recover more quickly. And that's the most important thing we can do. I supported Prop 15. Unfortunately, it failed. That would have been about $10 to $12 billion a year in new, fairly stable revenue. I can't say what's going to happen. I will say that getting a two-thirds vote on a tax measure in the California legislature is pretty darn hard. It's happened once in a significant way since I've been there around the gas tax, and that took years and years of work to make that happen. And so I think there may be an effort in 2022 to go to the ballot, but that would be hard as well. And so I don't know what's going to happen with revenue. I do know that we need to do everything in our power to get the economy to bounce back and recover as quickly as possible.
And I think as business think about, okay, what is my growth trajectory going to look like over the next decade? What and how many of those jobs are in California? They are watching closely, you know, some of the things that you're doing. It was interesting to watch sort of Prop 15 in California fail this month, which would have raised property taxes on commercial and industrial land. That was a bill that Mark Zuckerberg actually threw a lot of money behind. But you have been, I guess, one of the leaders on the issue of, you know, increasing housing density as well as sort of improving transit infrastructure, public transit infrastructure. I'm curious whether the political winds within California in particular have been slower than you expected in terms of supporting some of these measures, and where you are sort of putting your focus over the next few years to improve those two areas that you've been focused on.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I've been frustrated in terms of efforts to solve our horrific housing crisis, which is still with us despite COVID, and getting worse in some ways. You know, we've had over the last 5 years in the legislature some pretty big wins on housing, some new laws that have had very tangible impacts in terms of increasing the rate of housing production. With that said, we have to do a lot more. And the bill you're referring to that I authored, Senate Bill 50, was a big bill that would have had some real transformational impacts. You know, we made a lot of progress with it, and we almost got it passed out of the Senate, but came just short. It would have struggled in the Assembly. The politics are really rough around, you know, telling communities they have to allow more housing density. But it was a big lost opportunity. We had some good housing bills this year in the legislature that combined would not have been as impactful as SB 50, but would have, you know, been a significant step. For several unfortunate reasons, it sort of fell apart this year because of the pandemic shortened session. Just, we're going to take another run at it in 2021. And, you know, it's a problem that we have to deal with. And well before COVID, employers were very concerned about whether their workers were going to be able to find housing anywhere near where they work. And I've always viewed California's dysfunctional, broken housing system as one of the major threats to California's long-term economic success. It's not. I think, you know, people can debate about taxes and regulations, but housing is so fundamental to economic prosperity, and we are failing.
I mean, I guess as you're forecasting the coming years, as you're thinking about the future of the city and how its voter base will change, if at all, how its tax base will change, do you see this? I guess, what areas of change do you see coming to San Francisco from that perspective in the coming years?
There will be changes, right? And part of it is, and San Francisco has been a city of perpetual change, right? This city went through a horrible earthquake 113 or 114 years ago. We have gone through major economic turmoil. The city itself has been usually on a greater economic roller coaster than the country as a whole. We've always had turnover with people who come here, people who leave. I know there have been some folks in the tech sector, some senior people who have been very loud about how I'm leaving San Francisco. That's okay. People, you know, come and go, and that's nothing new in San Francisco for people to come and go. But the heart of the city, you know, remains the same. This is a progressive place where we want to be forward looking and want to be willing to try new things. And I'm confident that San Francisco is going to come out of this strong. It's an amazing place. People want to be here. People will be here. Companies will be here, and we're just going to be fine.
Well, Senator Scott Wiener, thanks so much for coming on the 411. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Now is the part of the show where I express what I am thankful for. This week, I am thankful for Scott Wiener for sitting down with us. I'm thankful for Corey Weinberg for doing the interview. I'm, of course, always thankful to Ariella Markowitz for producing. And I'm thankful for you, the listener, for always tuning in. See you back here next week.